thanks for making the trip out here. Want to dive into, man, there's people that have been talking to me, hitting me up about like, hey, when are we going to get Joe's podcast out? They just got questions as to how it went down last year and kind of to hear the story. So want to start out with, hey, how did you, like, what's the background? What should we know a little bit about Joe Turner before we get into what these people know you for, your performance and sales? And so if you could just take me back, you know, where'd the story start for you?
Yeah, so right now I'm a student athlete, play lacrosse at Siena Heights in Adrian.
Let's go.
You got that one right, which is good.
Yep.
Studying business, but probably learned more from this job than the actual classes itself. But still cool to, you know, like network and everything. But
why do you say that? Why do you feel like you've learned more from like a hands-on job than in a classroom?
Because anyone teaching, they don't like actually own a business, at least like at my school. Mm-hmm. So it's more of just like out of the book, you know,
okay. As
opposed to like actually real experience and, you know, getting out there and doing things. But beyond the student athlete component, I'm from Lapeer, Michigan, so like 40 minutes from around here.
Is that Genesee County as well?
It's Lapeer
okay.
County.
Okay.
Yeah, went to Lapeer High School, played lacrosse, football, was always pretty good at academics for the most part.
What was your favorite subject in school?
It was math probably until I took pre-calc, and then I was done with math after that.
Okay,
I understand that. That was the toughest class I've taken even to this day. Not pre-calc, it was AP calc. When I go home, live with my parents, mom and dad, Mike and Maria, and yeah, what else you want to know?
I appreciate that. What position did you play in football?
Outside linebacker.
How old were you when you graduated high school?
17.
Okay. And then from there, like what got you interested in pursuing sales in general? It's a challenging job from the outside looking in. A lot of people think, why would you want to go do that, get rejected, which the job entails a ton of. What was the beginning of that path for you?
I didn't know anything about it. So I was at the gym in Lapeer, the Planet mm-hmm. Fitness, and this older guy who I'd talked to in there came up to me when we were sitting on the bikes, and he's like, so what are you doing this summer? I said, well, probably working at the golf course in Lake Orion or the White Horse, which is a restaurant over by us. Mm-hmm. You know where Metamora is?
Yeah.
In there. And he's like, well, my son-in-law does this pest control thing, and he does pretty well. Would you be open to learning more? I didn't know anything about it, so I was like, sure. So I messaged him off of his phone on Facebook Messenger, Ethan, and then ended up talking to him, you know, over text and whatnot. And mm-hmm. then I was like, all right, so give me, you know, I believe you and everything, but like, give me some info of guys that, you know, like, they're a little younger, you know, not that he's old or anything, but right. You know,
he's,
like,
he's super young. We're the same age.
Yeah,
he's super young.
they're doing it right now, like just to talk to some other perspectives. Mm-hmm. So he gives me Tristan's number and Jack's mm-hmm. number, mm-hmm. and then basically, long story short, you know, he's like, if you want to go out with Jack, I think you guys could do really good together. And I was like, I'm not going out to Philly. That's too far, you know.
Sure.
And then I put that aside, like the distance part, mm-hmm. and I looked at it from like a more practical point of view. What would make more sense, you know, for me, and what would put me in a better situation overall. And once I started evaluating some things, then I decided, hey, that's where I'll go, mm-hmm. and worked out pretty good.
Yeah, that's the start of a cool story, man. That's one of the things when I initially started in Chicago, I had to leave the state to go somewhere. And initially it's like, yeah, that's a, you know, who wants to do that? And what I found, I'm not sure if you found this to be the case as well, but it was actually a lot. I actually really liked the focus part of leaving what I had, you know, been a part of, an environment I'd been a part of, just to go focus on growing as a professional, as an individual. I felt like it actually somewhat helped me to do that, and a lot of distractions were removed from the picture. I'm not sure if that's how it was in Philadelphia, but I remember that reluctance as well. Mm-hmm. And then also like the gratitude that I had was like, wow, I just had 4 months where there was literally nothing to do except for to work, because everything else was removed from my life. But yeah, obviously from the summer you didn't have a hard time focusing, so I guess we can kind of get into.
But it was cool. Like on the weekends we would do stuff while we're out there, you know, because I'd never been out that way, you know. I'd been to Florida, but not anywhere else east for the most part, you know. So
what are a couple of the things you guys would do during the weekends?
We went to a couple of Phillies games, Yankees game. We went to Times Square another day. We went to the Jersey Shore, which was cool. Mm-hmm. Saw the crabs and whatnot, just, you know, different stuff.
Let's go.
Pretty cool.
It's also awesome because you're getting like you're grinding so much that those events are just so fun to be with the guys and not be thinking about anything. But
I remember we had a couple of the barbecues too, and I pigged out some of those for sure.
Dude, who's on the grill there?
Baldwin.
Makes sense.
No, those burgers were good.
I've heard that he's amazing behind the grill. That's what I heard.
So he'll be doing it again this year, hopefully.
Hey, let's go. The Bald Eagle. So getting out to summer, like from the time that you talked to Todd, he introduced you to Ethan. Ethan introduced you to Tristan and Jack. Mm-hmm. Walk me through the process of going from, you know, not really knowing about sales, or did you have an understanding of sales prior to it in any way, or what was the process of preparing to go out for your first season?
I didn't really know what it was, and Jack's like, yeah, we should go to B-Dubs and, you know, watch the Lions lose to the Patriots and get some wings, because that's what happened. Yep, so we go, and I didn't know Brent was coming, and I remember, like, when I first had a call with Brent, I was kind of nervous, because, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's Jack's manager, right?
He's a legend, yeah.
So at the time, and well, I go there and I see Jack walk in, and then Brent's right there with him. I was like, oh, so this is serious. Mm. And that's how I got to meet them, and, you know, they asked me some questions and whatnot to see if it would make sense, and then end up coming out. And then as far as like preparation.
Can you, before you move on, will you walk me through what it felt like to meet up with like young professionals with their head on the way that they have their heads on at that mm-hmm. age, right? What did you feel at that time coming into that straight out of high school, like just simply coming in contact with like, hey, these guys are getting after it at a scalable level in life? What was that like?
It felt good because it felt like we were on the same page. Like we had a lot of commonalities, you know, mm-hmm. like hard work, you know, want to be successful, want to help people. And, like, I feel like not a lot of people are like that, really, you know. Yeah. So, like, to see that and, like, be, you know, relatively same age, too, is pretty cool.
But what were some of those takeaways that you learned as a young person, just seeing, like, real drive like that from other young individuals?
Accountability, you know, like, with yourself and other people. Discipline, you know, same kind of falls into that category. And then just seeing, like, you know, if you do the right things over time, it'll compound, and, you know, wherever you do it, whether it's, you know, in sales or whatever, that it'll pay off for you.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay so from there, have that interview, what happens next?
So then basically you had a couple, I remember, like, they added me to the WhatsApp and everything, and started training. And then just training calls, read the manual 4 times over, you know.
Let's go.
Because I signed in, like, the very, very end of October. So, like, had plenty of time to read it for sure.
Why'd you read it over and over again?
Because you pick up something new every time, for sure. Mm. Like, even I'll read it now and still find stuff that's like, hey, I don't remember picking up on that, like, you know, maybe as much, or, you know, you learn something new. Mm-hmm. And pick apart the pitches are good, too, because you see all the best reps making sales and, you know, how they approach certain objections or, you know, certain houses, certain situations, certain people.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of like a specific takeaway that you feel like you got from visually, you know, seeing somebody that's exceptionally good at sales, making a real sale? What was a takeaway you can recall?
I would say, like, you can listen to voice memos of, you know, everybody, but like when you actually see the pick apart the pitches, it's the video that you want to look at more so. Mm-hmm. Like when they get objections or, you know, brush offs, their body language doesn't like show that it's a, like, it doesn't phase them, you know, it doesn't show mm-hmm. anything. So just like seeing how they get an objection, it's like, oh, okay, not a big deal. Push it aside and keep going.
Yeah.
So I say body language is really cool for the pick apart the pitches. You can dissect it and use it for, you know, your own good.
Yeah, that was super helpful for me as well. Okay, so, and what else besides manual pick apart the pitches, what else were you doing to get prepped?
Cold showers. I mean, just like anything.
Why is this such a go-to for, like, I mean, why is it such a go-to, cold showers, man?
Because it's tough, but there's health benefits, you know, and like improve concentration, especially when you do it in the morning. And it feels good when you're done too. Just when you're in there, sometimes it's a little tougher. I mean, you know, because you do the cold plunge.
But it wakes you, yeah, it wakes you up.
So, you know, hard stuff like that. Exercise, you know, working out, lifting, running. And like I had practice too, so I was pretty good shape. And
why do you think that you know, we see a lot of performers with that in common, consistent routines of exercise or lifting. Why do you think that that's such a prevalent commonality we see amongst high performers?
One is it's healthy, right? And when you feel good, you know, you're gonna perform good too. So you know, you feel good, look good, perform good, confidence thing. And then it's just healthy for you too. And then also the mindset, you know, if you go in there and, you know, you hit legs or whatever it is for you that's like tougher, you don't want to do it, and then you go do it, it's rewarding, you know. It's like, hey, I kept my word, and I can keep my word, and you know, I can push through whatever is tough.
What else was there leading up to summer?
Reading the books. I was not a reader at all, unless it was like in elementary school, there was March's reading month, and whoever read the most books, like, they'd win something. So it was like a big competition.
What's that? Wait, so you competed, how old were you?
Third, fourth, fifth grade.
Do you remember any of the books that you read?
I don't remember the names of them, but there was like series, and they were pretty good books.
Okay.
But I read them because, yeah, they were good, but I wanted to win. Whatever it was, the prize. And so outside of that, like, I never read. It was boring. Mm-hmm. But then once I saw, like, it's really beneficial for you, like, to read itself and also, like, what you can learn, I looked at it from that lens. Like, every time I read, I'm learning something, mm-hmm. if not, you know, many more things. And reading some of the, you know, the book club books, that helped me realize that. And I read, like, you know, two a month now, listen to one and read one at least. So
mm-hmm. Isn't it wild how different it is when other people are telling you the specific information to consume and like what that is like versus you getting to choose, you know, anything that's going to benefit you. You just open up like, hey, what do I want to learn about and read? That's, I was the exact same way, hated reading in school because I didn't see the value in what it was that I was reading most times, you know.
Well, it's usually probably a textbook.
Yes. You know. I was like, I'm not going to be a scientist, so this is, you know, this is not going to really help me a lot, but mm-hmm. Yeah, that same like flip of a switch happened for me as well, and I think that's really important for people to understand. Like, reading often has negative connotations associated with it based on the context that you start reading, which is in school. You don't get to choose, and then when you change that dynamic with reading, it's like awesome. It's exploring whatever mm-hmm. you want to explore. You know,
what do you want to learn?
Yeah. So that's huge. And what's one of your favorite books leading up to, you know, to going out and selling that you felt was really beneficial for you?
There's a lot of good ones. I would say Outwitting the Devil's up there.
Yeah.
And
What'd you get? That's like such a impactful book. What's the takeaway you had from Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill that you took with you after reading that book?
I would just say, like, it opens your eyes to, like, all the distractions and, like, just having the discipline to do what you know you should be doing and what's right and sticking to that regardless of all the other noise. Mm-hmm. And another good one was Can't Hurt Me. I just finished that one last month. I was looking at, like, I mean, if he can do this, then I can do this, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is, you know, and I thought it was really good. Like, the best part is probably, like, he talks about, like, legacy, you know, how do you want your book to read, and the 40% rule. Like, you give everything and you still are only at, like, 40% of your potential.
Mm-hmm. You ever thought about that during a workout?
Yeah. Sometimes I think it's a law of averages with that, because sometimes there might be a little less in the tank than 60, but
I think the body weight stuff is the most. That book really impacted me when I first read it, and I was reading it while I was in the gym, and the body weight stuff, you actually can
pull-ups.
Do some wild. So yeah, pull-ups. I'm 40% for me. I don't think I could do 60% more. I could try. I don't think I could do 60% more pull-ups. But if you get into, like, abs, you know, like your core stuff, you can get yep. sore for
probably squats too.
As long as they're not super heavy.
Like body weight, if that's what you're talking about.
Anything body weight. So that's a very dangerous book to read while you're at the gym,
mm-hmm.
because every time you go to stop the thing, it's in your mind. It's like, dude, Goggins put it down like 50 times more than what I'm doing right now. You just keep going. Okay, so Can't Hurt Me, Outwitting the Devil, any other like books that really were helpful for you?
There's a lot. Like, everyone I've read, it's been good. Another good one was Atomic Habits was good. Mm. Helps you, just helps you realize, like, the importance of what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, you know, like the little things. And it's interesting because, like, he talks about how to get a habit started, and, you know, you don't really need much, like, you know, just a few minutes to start it. It's more about the consistency. And then, like, the tricks you can play on your brain, like, when you do one thing, like, if you make it, like, a cue, like, with another thing, so that way, like, you're more apt to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, building those habits and the compounding of the habits, you know, of where you can grow and get where you want to go.
Yeah, will you take me through a time where you didn't have a habit that you wanted to start to implement? And, like, what was that process like? Did it happen right away? Like, did you mess them up? Like, how have you most successfully begun habits that you didn't have?
Just tell myself I'm going to do it. And then I think the best way is, like, tell someone else what you're going to do. Because then, like, they know. Obviously, like, you know what you are or aren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have to report to somebody else, I feel like, and you say it out loud, it's more of like a, yeah, I didn't do that.
Mm.
Or, like, yeah, I did do that. So, you know, when you have to report to somebody else, like, accountability partner, or, like, you just say, hey, yeah, I'll make sure that I'm doing that. And then, you know, they ask you, hey, how's this going? You know, what are you going to tell them?
Hey, I love that accountability is, I mean, you play sports, you know,
yeah.
you sell as well. It's a huge part of being consistent in your performance, right, is having that accountability. Love that hack. Has there ever been a time where you wanted to remove a habit from your life, and how did you go about doing that?
Not necessarily, but, like, you know, I'm sure there's things like, oh, for Lent, I gave up sweets.
Mm.
So it's a little bit different, but I basically just said, you know, I'll have my last day of it, and then after that, I'm just going to be done with it. That's it, and hold myself to it. And then I told other people, like, hey, for Lent, I'm giving up sweets.
Mm-hmm.
That way I can't forget, because, you know, when I'm around them, they'll be like, hey, what are you doing?
Yep.
Put that cookie down.
Yep.
Or, you know, a cupcake, whatever it is. So, yeah, I would say, like, that's the best way, like, whether it's a good habit or a bad habit, like, where you want to add it or subtract it, when you tell other people, it solidifies it more, because it's not just you. Like, you're not the only one in the picture. You know, and then you know, if I do eat the cookie or the cheesecake, whatever's calling my name, it's like my word, like they see my word is, you know, broken. And mm-hmm. I feel like that weighs a lot more on you than like your personal self.
Yeah. Hey, I agree. And I also think that for me, and I don't know if it's the same for other people, that's what the gym, that's the most significant thing about the gym and what it's meant to my life has been that, like, when you say you're going to do a certain amount of reps, you know, and obviously you're not being stupid and like, you know, hoisting up ridiculous amounts of waste when you do this, but it's about, yeah, you know, something that you can do, you know, physically without breaking your bones. Right. And when you say you're going to do that, there's nobody that heard you say that in your head as to how many you're going to do. And there's nobody that can tell that at the end of your set, if you have several more reps, there's nobody there. Like, it is just you. And if you keep your word to yourself, that thing that you said you're going to do, I said I was going to do 15, and it starts to, you know, be crazy hard at 11, right? Like, are you good? You can pause at the bottom for 2-3 seconds and go again, right? Or you can just put the weight down. And that's keeping your word to yourself has been the most significant benefit for me, I think, of going to the gym or working out or exercising, whatever that is. It's just building up that, you know, so you can believe yourself. Mm-hmm. When you say you're going to do something. And yeah, like if you've ever stopped doing something, like if you did like leg lifts and you said you're going to do a certain amount and you stop ahead of time, sometimes like it bothers you so much. Sometimes I'll just go back to like, dude, I have to finish this. Yeah. Set. Like just go back and just start doing it. Cause your mind won't let mm-hmm. you like, let it go. Right.
Yeah. I've been there.
Yup. Okay. So first of all, before we move past this whole, can you just describe Lent so that we can all make sure that everybody's yeah. following along? What is Lent?
Yeah, so it's a 40-day period leading up to Easter where I might be just like all Christians in general, mm-hmm. but like Catholics for sure, like they give up something or they decide to do something instead. So I gave up sweets because mm-hmm. I knew that was something that I can do, but, you know, it's tough. It's not easy. But you do that basically and it, you know, it's a preparation thing for Easter.
Okay. Hey. Love that yeah. one. Make sure else to stay following.
Keep everyone on the same page.
Yep, yep. Okay, so were there any other significant parts of your preparation to go perform as a salesman for the first time? Was there any other thing that comes to mind that you did?
Just doing the hard things, doing the right things, I'd say. You know, it's not always easy. There's other stuff going on. You know, you don't want to read the manual when you can go do whatever. I mean, for some people it's play video games, or maybe it's, you know, go outside and play some cornhole or go fishing. Like mm-hmm. those are things I like to do, but like I would still like set aside a little bit of time. Doesn't have to be like an insane amount every single day, but just like keep the habits and the consistency.
Like why not just go enjoy your time leading up to summer? The hard part's gonna be here.
You can do both here. I think you can do both. There's 24 hours in a day. You know, you can get done the things you need to get done and still have fun too. I don't think there has to be like dichotomy or whatever it is. Something like that. Sure, divide, sure. Maybe, dichotomy, yep, whatever yep, it yep, is, yep. Of like you can only do this or you can only do that. I think you can do both.
No scarcity mentality.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason you can't get done what you need to get done and then do, you know, some fun stuff too. By the time you get to the summer, the hay's already in the barn. At that point, you know, you've already, all the time, it was either put in or it wasn't. And mm-hmm. you're either going to be playing catch up or you're going to go out there and you're going to be shooting, you know, or swinging for the fences, whatever.
From your perspective of being a college player, you understand what it's like to compete. You understand what it's like to go and try to win. And then to, like, turn your head and be like, whoa, this is a huge game that's set up in a capitalist system that I live in. Like, what's that look like to you?
I think it's super applicable. Like, you know, you take a team, you know, there's a leader, just like with any business, and the same leadership principles translate for the most part. And, you know, all the discipline, the work ethic and commitment that you have in sports, it's the same thing with business for the most part. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, day to day things are different, but you can translate like all the habits and the mental stuff to business. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps for most people. I mean, that's why you see with just this job or, you know, in like finance or insurance or whatever it is, like a lot of the high performers are former athletes. And it's because they already had that built and they understand it, so then they can just take it from here and use it here.
So I think we're approaching summertime. Let's put you in the position where you're just about to go out to market, right? Like, if you can talk to us about, like, what was that like? What was the actual, like, last second preparation that you did to prepare for, you know, say, let's say that you're a couple days out from getting shipped out to Philly. What was that time frame like?
It was doing a few things that I wanted to do before I left for the summer. And then I had a notebook that I wrote, like, all the objections in, and, like, intro, bridge, price sheet. But I had all that down by then. But, like, I would just read through the objections a lot. Like, even if it's, like, 5 minutes here or there, I just, instead of, like, using my phone because I like to, like, see it on paper, mm-hmm. just grab the notebook, read through it a few times, then do whatever I was doing. And I would just do that, like, really whenever I had a few spare minutes. And, like, over time, that adds up. So just stuff like that and just preparing, like, you know, I'm going to go out there and have no regrets and make the most of my summer. Either way, I'm going to learn something. I'm going to meet some people, have a cool experience, you know, in a different spot that I've never been. Like, I knew at the bare minimum, no matter what else happened, like, that's what I was going to have. And that's what helped me, like, come in with that mindset.
Did you have any relationships that you had to set, that you set expectations with for the next 4 months? Were there any, you know, whether they're friendships or relationship or, you know, family, were there any expectations that you set to prepare yourself to go all in for 4 months?
Not really. I just told my friends, like, hey, I'll be back, you know, at the end of the summer, and I'll see you guys the whole school year. And then probably hardest one was my parents, because I know, you know, they really miss me. But I talk to them every day, like, over text.
That's awesome. Wait, so
yeah.
The morning, evening, like, afternoon, night?
Morning for sure, and then at night. And then, like, you know, I'd get busy, obviously, through the day. But, you know, like, toward the end of the summer, like, as the top 10 rookie race was heating up, mm-hmm. I would text them, like, hey, here's one, two. And then, like, sometimes they wouldn't hear from me, and my dad would be like, so how'd it go? And then I'd say, you know, like, maybe it was, like, five, six, or seven, or whatever. But, like, other days I would just keep them posted. But, you know, you get lost out there sometimes.
Wait, what are their names?
Mike and Maria.
Shout out to your parents, man. Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. So you just let them know, hey, I'll be back. All right. So now we're on your way. Did you drive out to Philadelphia? Okay. Did you drive with anybody, by yourself?
Yeah. I drove with another person.
Okay. So then you get to what was it like getting to market? What was the actual, like, impact of being there like? And then, yeah, if you could walk us through that experience.
I didn't know what to expect. You know, it was a pretty scenic drive, you know, except for Ohio, but you get to Pennsylvania.
Agreed.
And, you know, there's all the mountains, and you better not miss an exit, because otherwise it's like 25 miles until your next one.
Right.
But, you know, going through the tunnel, pretty cool, couple tunnels. And then it's like, all right, New Jersey. Like, I didn't even know for the most part that we were going to be in New Jersey, because, you know, it's Philly, so I was like, oh, we're going to be in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So we were actually staying in New Jersey, get out there, and I was there, like, 3 weeks, you know, before most, well, actually 4 weeks later than most, like, when it started.
What date did you get out there?
22nd was my first, like, actual day.
Okay.
Of May.
And you were coming straight from college?
I was home for a couple of days, and so okay. I left from home and went there.
Okay. 22nd of May. That's one of the most surprising things about your story, is that while being top 10 with the rookies, you had significantly less time to do it than your peers that were in that same group. So, yeah, just to give you adequate flowers there, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you get there, like, to market. What's your room situation like? Like, the first meeting? What's all that?
So, Jack's apartment, it was a two-story complex, and his was above our room. And I was in with the South Carolina guys, and I didn't know them, like, so I got to meet them, and
cleaner crew, right? That's the
yeah. There was, like, six of us in there for a little bit, and you know, I liked living in there. It was cool. And just didn't really know what to expect, like, overall. And, like, when you, it doesn't really set in, like, that you're, like, gonna do it until, like, you actually get out there, and then, like, you're at the morning meeting, and it's like, you know, you're in the, you know, the shirt, you got the pants on, your hat, tool belt, and it's like, I'm actually going to go do this.
Yep.
That's like when it finally set in. But I was excited, you know, and I remember like the first morning meeting, they had all the names on the board, and obviously I wasn't on there because it was my first day. Mm-hmm. And it was just motivating to me, you know, because I knew I was at the very bottom and I wanted to work my way up, you know.
Yep. Yep. Okay, so after that first meeting, dude, what was your first ever experience like? Do you remember like your first door? Walk us through it, man.
So Brent drove me out with a couple other guys, and I hadn't knocked the door yet, so he dropped me off last, and then he's like, I'll show you how it's done for a little bit, and then I'll turn you loose and watch for a little bit, and then I'll head out. Mm-hmm. So I remember it pretty vividly. Well, we pull up to this spot, and I didn't really know how to work the app or anything still, so he's trying to teach me how to, you know, mark pins and whatnot. So he knocks for probably like 20 minutes. He gets some names, but, you know, maybe threw a price sheet or two, nothing crazy. And then we turn the corner, and he's like, all right, it's your turn. It's like, okay. So knock the house, and her dogs are going crazy. She comes out. Husband does it. We do it ourselves, blah, blah, blah. End up going to the backyard and then sign her up. And then I was like, this isn't so bad. And he's like, I just want you to understand, like, you know, it's not going to be that easy.
Yep, yep.
But it's really cool. I'm glad you did that, but it's not going to be that easy. So we go to the next house, and it was either like the house right next door or the one over. It was the next person we talked to. Mm-hmm. And it was like super similar scenario. Yeah, husband handles that. We do it ourselves. Backyard. And I was like, let's do it again. So then signed her up. And then he's like, you're good. I'm not going to waste my time here. So
yep, yep.
He's like, if you have any questions, I mean, I think you've probably figured it out by now. So mm-hmm. then he let me go, and that was the last time I was knocked with, was that day.
First of all, so that the listeners understand, that is absolutely an outlier story. Like, that is not the norm.
They were saying it was going to be super hard, and, you know, so I was
so
like,
Brett was probably freaking out because he's like, dude, I got to set these expectations. This kid is literally thinking that this job is like every door is a sale at this point.
Yeah. And I figured out really quick, like, that's not the case. But at first I was like, this isn't so bad.
Right, right. Well, I mean, hey, there's highs and lows in sales, and you started off on a
page. Oh, yeah.
I shouldn't say Brent's Brett was freaking out because I've never seen him on level at any point, but I'm sure he was thinking like, dude, I got to try to get this kid to understand. So what did you end up finishing that? Was that day finished with two sales? How many did you end up finishing with?
I had five.
Five your first day?
And they were BIMO, so it was like six.
Just a casual five spot your first day?
Yeah.
Well, that's a, that makes sense. That's how the story of Joe Turner starts the doors.
I didn't know it was like that big of a deal because, you know, coming in, you don't know what you don't know. So I was like, oh, I mean, that's... My goal for the day was like four, so I went over my goal by one. Mm-hmm. And then at the morning meeting, my name wasn't on the board, but Jack was the guy calling out the numbers, so he remembered, you know, me. And he's like, you know, Joe, how many did you get? And I said five. Everyone was going, you know, they were going crazy. And mm-hmm. I was like, I guess it's somewhat of a big deal. So then...
Well, before you move on... Hey, part of not just you, Joe, but you and the other high performers I know, like, that I've got to have conversations with, like the highest achievers, they all have that mentality, which is very, like, other people might be freaking out about what it is that they do. People around you freaking out that you did five. And for you, it's like, cool, I get one more than my goal. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out tomorrow. That's a really common thread. They just, like, they don't focus on what just happened. They don't lose their mind. It's just like the next thing is the next door. It's the next day. It's like on your way. To your goal.
And part of it was I just didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. You know, so that like freshness, I guess, like, you know, you don't know what you're gonna do. And then I felt like some of the people thought like, oh, it was his first day, it was just a coincidence. So then the second day I did the exact same thing. I sold a couple $100 more, but five sales, $6K. And then
let's go.
Same thing, you know, at the morning meeting, and then everyone was like, okay, he might be pretty good. And then the third day, I had, I think, two. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth day, I had I had four. And then.
So we're at 16, 4 days in. Is that right?
So, yeah.
Okay.
And then that Friday, I picked up probably like two or so. And I was trying to get the, like, the record for the week, because I think it was around like 20, like someone's first week. I think it was around like 25 or something.
The chats were all, the chats were buzzing by Friday about this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember Saturday, I was like, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get it. But I was like, so focused on that. Like I was focused on the results so much more than like, have a good intro, have a good bridge, price sheet, you know, move around the home. And I bageled. And I remember, I think one of the other guys picked me up, one of the other rookies, but when I got back, I was like kind of upset with myself, and you know, everyone else is like, you know, it's going to happen, like especially, you know, when you're just starting out, and Brent's like, it's a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it is.
You needed that, like, just to understand, like, it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows, you know, there'll be things, but you can learn from it. You know, I learned a lot from not selling anything that day, but it was just tough because it was like I worked for however many hours today, worked super hard, I made zero, you know? But then it was like, well, I just worked for 5 days and I made however much before that. So it's like, you know, that's why perspective thing.
And that's also, you know, one of the parts of like the mental grit that sales requires. And not everybody can do that. Like, we ride the highs, survive the lows, stay neutral through them.
Yep.
And you did learn a ton from that day. Like, dude, I bet you, like you said, you just focused on the result versus the process. What was Monday of the next week like after you?
It was, I think it was Memorial Day, and I sold like four that day.
Okay.
So I bounced back.
That is a hell of a first week in the industry. The important thing, so, okay, there's people with all different skill levels, obviously, that come to the table and start. Some people like develop a skill set over long periods of time and they become excellent and they didn't start out that good. Like, they're maybe not supernaturally prone to just being awesome socially, right? It takes time. Other people come out, they're super capable, you know, right away, they're hot, and then they might not have the discipline. Some of them do, most of them don't have the discipline to consistently do that. The big factor for people that are looking to be exceptional in sales is that you have natural talent, man, which is just God-given. Like, that's awesome, right? Everybody's got their own form of talent. You have talent. And then also, you did not rest on that. You came out super prepared. There's no way that you end up having a first week like that unless you are flipping through all those objections and that you are being consistent with the different things leading up to summer, four times through the training manual, pick apart the pitch videos, all that. Like, that allowed for you to have – that allowed for your talent to actually – you know, just like show itself.
Yeah. I think the other biggest thing too, kind of goes overlooked, is like when you don't know anything, at least for me, I was like, everyone's a buyer. Mm-hmm. And like, I just didn't believe anything at first. Like, any of the objections they tell me, like, oh, it's just, I got to say this because like I memorize it. So it's like, I say that and I say that and I say that. And I think that helped me, like, especially that first week, is just not believing like what they're saying is real, you know, at least at first, and just believing in yourself, like, hey, I can make it happen.
Diving back in to after your first week on the doors, did you start to see the vision of like, I can be a top 10 rep, even though you're coming from that far behind? Like, what was your mental state when you saw what you did your first week?
Yeah. So I thought I could do it like coming out there before the first day, but after the first day, I was like, okay. And then the second day, it was like, all right, I definitely can do this. And then I remember on my fourth day, so that Thursday, I had the four sales that I had them by like noon. And I remember Ty Phillips put in the WhatsApp, I think it was him. He's like, that boy Hemi Turner with four by noon, and it's like dude's fourth day. So that's where Hemi came from.
Shout out Ty Phillips.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Jackson Woodham, who was one of the guys I was living with at the time.
Beast.
Yeah, absolutely. He was like Joe Turner, top 10 rookie, like watch out or something like that. And that's like those series of like messages and whatnot, like that's what really helped me like see that vision and identity, like, hey, it is still possible, even coming out, you know, a little bit later than everybody else. So, like, that's the biggest thing I've been telling, like, my rookies, is just, like, the identity thing. Like, you know, are you the hardest worker? Are you top 10 rookie? Are you the best closer? Whatever it is, like, that's what your identity is. So, you know, tell yourself that. And, like, when you hear other people say it, you know, social proof, mm-hmm. it like helps validate that too. So your habits are going to align with your identity, you know. Like, if you tell someone, hey, you know, you're a top 10 rookie, and you do it enough, they're going to start to do the things that align with that, versus if you tell them, hey, you're a 150K rep or whatever it is, like, you know, then they're going to start to do the things that align with that.
Mm-hmm. Would you run through some of the biggest differences between the performer cultures that you've been a part of? I'm not sure if you'd put sports teams. I know that you had a really successful sports team that you were on last year, mm-hmm. collegiately. I'm not sure if you'd put that in the same category as, you know, the record breaking summer that your team just had this last year, which was just incredible to see. But what are some of the things that you experience in, you know, that high performance culture, and what are some of the differences between the cultures that did not require that of you, some of the more average cultures? What are some of those differences?
Accountability, no negativity, growth mindset.
Wait, no negativity, dude. That's just some positive bull crap. What are you talking about, man? Like, I mean, you know,
don't even have to say positive. You know, as we've learned now, mm-hmm. doesn't even have to be positive. Just don't say something negative.
So, can you talk about, you know, the ways in which, you know, you've harnessed momentum, like how you can utilize momentum in what it is that your life and what we do.
Early on in the day, make your bed, which I used to think was the stupidest thing, never did it. But then my mom was like, no, you should do it. And then I started doing it most of the time. And then the Admiral McRaven.
Yep.
Once I saw that, plus what she said, that solidified it. So I've done it, you know, every day since.
Okay.
But, you know, make your bed, get the little wins. Like, whatever you tell yourself you're going to do, going back to that, do it, because then that's momentum. Mm-hmm. And then
doing the things you say you're going to do, yeah. No matter how small they are.
Yeah.
That is momentum.
Yep. And then you can translate that to the doors. All right. Door slam. All right. I'm just going to try and get a good intro. If I can get through it, cool. If I can't, then I'm going to try and get a name or a bug. So it goes from door slam to maybe name or bug. Then I go to the next house. And then maybe it's the same thing, but I got a couple names and a couple bugs. So it's better than door slams, right? Mm-hmm. Then I go to the next house. I get through my intro and bridge. And then, say, the next house, because of what I've already done, I got names and bugs. Maybe I get through my price sheet. So then it's like, okay, I've turned the hard nose into some price sheets. And then a couple of price sheets. Then maybe I get to a backyard, a couple of backyards, and maybe I make a sale. And then maybe I go on and make 5 more sales. Well, it's all because it started with, I decide I'm going to turn those door slams into something positive. Mm. Or maybe you can't even get a name or a bug. So what you can control is you leave it with a positive experience, like, hey, have a good one. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. That's still momentum.
That's the starting the momentum, right? Like,
yeah.
So what are your thoughts around keeping it rolling?
Biggest thing is just, like, sticking to it, but performing. I mean, that helps. Like, I didn't know what momentum was until, like, July 1st. My first 2 days were my biggest days until July 1st.
Wow.
Wow. Which was, like, it was kind of tough because it's, like, what am I doing that I wasn't doing? But you also don't want to be too analytical.
I was 6K for a rookie. Yeah, you're up against some numbers that you
had. Right. So then July 1st, I was, like, you know, it's a Saturday, fresh start, you know, new month, and I'm just going to go do really good today. Like, that's just what I told myself. And then it was early in the day, too, and I ended up selling 3 in a row. And I felt like, for the first time, I felt like that really, like, buzz feeling, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I ended up with 7, I want to say, that day. And then the next day was Sunday, so it was off. And then it was Monday, and we had the 4th of July off, like the whole company, I think. So I was like, well, I just got to work super hard today, and I get tomorrow off. I sold like another 7. So then
– back-to-back 7 spots?
Yeah. Okay. So then it was like, okay, I see like what this feels like. And Brent's like, the biggest thing is like when you get momentum, you can, you know, really use that to your advantage. Mm-hmm. I've read about it in a lot of books too. And like Jack would talk about it. But then like that week I did pretty solid. But like every week that month, like I did better. Like the first week I did good. The second week I did good. And then the third week was my PR for the whole summer.
What was your PR for the summer?
34.9 something. It was close to 35.
Okay, phenomenal.
Yeah. And then just like I like that one day like sparked the rest of the summer, like for the momentum.
That first sale happens. What's your thought process right then? What happens next?
So at first, like super exciting.
Sure.
But then I learned like, yeah, it's cool. I got a sale, but that's not that's just helping me warm up, you know what I mean? So, like, I guess it was just, like, thinking about, like, I did what I'm supposed to do next door, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then just, like, at the end of the day, I'd be like, all right, yeah, like, you know, that was a good day, or, you know, maybe I learned something today, whatever it was. But, like, during the day itself, it was just, like, trying to stay as, like, neutral as possible, just because you don't want to get, like, too excited.
Probably don't realize it because it's a part of your process, but just next door. Like, you made a sale? Just next door. I feel as though many people come up short on their goals, on what they're capable of doing, because they do get more excited than serves them from their sales. It's just cool, next door.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't even know if cool, just that's part of the process.
And like the houses where it would be like backyard, move, price drop, and I didn't sell them, they used to be like, I should have sold that house, you know? And it went from like that to like, that's just momentum to the next door. I'm going to sell the next door.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like a belief thing, you know.
Well, you're warming up. You were right there. Like this neighborhood, like they need it. They need it.
Yep.
Like the next door's down.
Care but don't care. Like care, like, you know, you want to help them and, you know, get the sale. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Like as long as you know, you do everything that you know you should have done, then you can be at peace with it, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm. The parallel that's often used is, you know, for a shooter, you know, they have, like, goldfish-esque memories, right? Like, they can't remember anything except for made shots to build their confidence for the next make, right? Is that what allowed you to have that perspective where you did not carry negativity of any kind from an interaction, like you just mentioned, where you didn't close it? What was the perspective shift that allowed you to see it as like, oh, I'm right there, like the next, you know, it's coming? What
I think it's just like a belief thing. Because if you believe that, you know, everything's going to work out and that you're capable of, you know, making the next sale, then I think you put that aside and it's like, all right, you know, that was an opportunity, but here's another one. And then I believe I can do it, and then, you know, go see what happens.
Okay, belief. Love that. Was there anything that you think was really significant between May 22nd and July 1st that we left out to this point in the summer?
Sold, like, you know, whatever it was the first week, you know, fair amount. And then for my standards and my goals, the weeks in between – until the end of June were not where they needed to be.
Okay.
So there were a few things that I corrected or adjusted that last week of June. I did some math and I was like, all right, it's just non-negotiable. I have to sell 4 more every single day the rest of the summer to get where I want to go. And then that week, like the first week I sold 4, second day I sold 4. So then it was like, okay, I can do this. And then I don't know what I finished with on the week, but it was double what I sold the last week. So the things I adjusted were simplicity, because that first week I did well and I was like, oh, I think I know what I'm doing. And then I was kind of doing some of my own thing, not like sticking to the basics and what, you know, has proven to work. Mm-hmm. So
can you give me one example of like a thing that you just threw out?
Just like, I just was kind of doing my own thing. And like, if I was in a tough scenario, like if I was having a rougher day, I wouldn't like stick to like the same intro. Like, it's okay to like mix it up to like see what, you know, is working. Mm-hmm. But like, I would just like flip flop. Like, I wouldn't pick something and stick to it. Okay. And just stuff like that. But simplicity and then educating the homeowner, you know, like show them the need, present the solution, right?
Can you give me an example of how you do that?
Yeah, I would say just, you know, show them stuff around the house or, you know, explain to them. You want to tailor it to them. So it's never like a generalized approach, whether for it's either maintenance or more of like a, I don't know, offensive mm-hmm. type of approach for, you know, them. You know, show them what they need and how it's going to benefit them, and then, you know, explain our solution and how, you know, that helps them. And then I would just say, like, the last part was probably belief, tying into the rest of it, but simplicity, educate them, and belief.
Okay. So simplicity, we ran through a little bit of that.
Just not like word vomiting, you know.
What do you think are some of the most important things that educating a customer requires? Like, what goes into mm-hmm. being the person that the customer, you know, receives education from?
Sometimes you have to help them see things because, you know, not everyone's out there looking for bugs, right? Mm-hmm. Unless they find them, but
right.
So, you know, show them the situations, you know, maybe it's more of a preventative thing or, you know, there are bugs there. Show them it and then explain to them why they're seeing it, maybe, you know, with the lake, with the trees, with how, you know, mild the winter was or the rain, how hot the summer is, whatever. Mm-hmm. Show them why. And then after that, it's more of like a, how do we go about helping you with this? So it's like, why is our solution gonna take care of it? Well, since it's so hot out here, everyone's been getting some of the ants, but the reason you're getting them still is because that pump can, it's just like a contact kill, so they'll tend to come back because they're actually out in the soil. So I'll use a granule to flush them away from the home so you can have peace of mind while you're barbecuing out here. So it's simple, but it educates them as to why they're still seeing whatever it is.
So midsummer, you start to implement the three different things that you came to realize would, you know, elevate your sales: mm-hmm. simplicity, educating the customer, and belief. And then, will you walk us through your personal thoughts and path from there to the end of summer?
Started with that first, the July 1st, and then that week was good. And that was my best week since, like, my first week. So, like, all right, I'm doing something right, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then second week was good, too. And then third week. So we go to the Phillies game, me, Ben, and Ty. And we all had said, like, this is just going to be a good week. Like, we're all going to go off. So that Monday, it was the first time going to Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Because we were in Jersey up until that point in the summer.
Okay, yeah, remember this.
And then I did well those first 2 days, like four or so each. Mm-hmm. And then that third day, I remember really vividly, night before, so Tuesday night, I look at my hood for the day. And it's on the – so there's a river that separates New Jersey and Delaware – or New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's called the Delaware River. Well, my hood was right there. And I was like, this is going to be a good day. Like, I just had a feeling. So I get out there, it's drizzling, and I'm getting no's until 2:30. But this is the difference from the beginning of the summer. The day might have been over by then, like at the beginning of the summer. But here I was just getting started. Like, I still was believing, hey, you know what, today's going to be a good day. So then I sell this older couple, and she's like, I hope you sign up everybody. out here or something like that. And like in my head, I was like, I'm going to. So I go to the next house, sign her up. Then I go down one more because the next door neighbor wasn't home. I signed them up. So that was three in a row. So I went, I had like three by like 3:30 or so.
Okay.
And then I ended up getting to 8. And it's like 8:45. And I'm sitting at like two or three in the company. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've got to be number one. Like, I was just feeling it. So, like, I couldn't stop. So, I had a lot of social proof. So, but it was dark. So, I was just looking for, like, lights. So, I knocked this house, which is across from, like, a string of, like, four that I sold. On the other, so, like, the river, these houses, and they're across the road.
Okay, okay.
The lights are on. They're watching the Phillies game, this guy. So, I knock the door. He looks over at me, looks back at the game. I knock again. He comes out. What do you want? Hit him with the intro. Do you do rats? And I was like, this could be it. And then, you know, they were going to go on vacation. So, you know, I had to overcome quite a few objections. And then basically, like, I gave the wife the quick rundown. And then I was like, because she was like, so do you want a card or what? Like, mm-hmm. After I had told her things, she's like, so do you need a card? And I was like, yeah. So then she came out, credit card, signed him up, and then it was enough to, it was my first 10K day.
Let's go.
And then I was number one in the company that day. But it all started because I didn't give up. Like, I had the belief, yeah, it's 2:30, I have no sales, but I still had that feeling. Mm-hmm. So it was a joke, like, on the river. Like whenever I'm on that river, on the river, like I do good. 'Cause the next day I sold probably like 8. And then later on in August, I went back over there, like more south, I think. And I did a couple 7-8 days over there too. So it was just like an identity thing. So like for any of the rookies out there, like every hood's good, good hood, but like, if there's something where it's like, you know, you just got a good feeling, like have that identity. Like for me, whenever I was on the river, then
is it the river or the river?
It's the
on the river.
On the river, I was gonna do good. It was just started with a feeling that I had, but then I kind of embraced it. So, mm-hmm. You know, whether for like, I know some guys, it's the townhomes.
Yeah. Some. Yep. Yep. Some and like guys that, love trees, selling like whether yeah. There are large trees around or just like near.
That's an,
wood line.
That's another thing too, because. I was having a slower day on a Saturday, and I texted a couple guys. I was like, hey, I sent them a picture of my hood, and I said, hey, just wait till I get over to these trees over here. Like, I circled it. And then, like, within the hour, I go over there, and I sold, like, 3 over there. So, like, yeah, trees, townhomes.
Dude, some people.
Whatever.
Do you like, I understand, obviously, you like, the salesman makes the hood. Understand that, right? We've sold everywhere. Some people like straight up cookie cutter houses, like nothing in the grass. Just like, have you been in a neighborhood where it's just straight up middle America? Everybody knows everybody. Like, people are walking their baby. It's like, have you been in one of those neighborhoods where it's, and the houses are like, you know, in Michigan they'd be like $300,000 to $400,000
yeah.
to $450,000 houses, $250,000 to $450,000.
Yep.
Yeah, that's like that's a vibe too. Mm-hmm. If you get the buzz going though. You know, like,
because everyone knows everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Dude. I there was a neighborhood. That was the best sales experience of my life. Is like when you got to the point where they're like grilling and stuff, and they're like, "Oh, what's up, man? You want something?" And like everybody knows who you are.
That's how it was on July 1st.
Was that like, on the river or before?
That? No, that was before that was a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, top 10, man, hunting that down. So, tell me about. Your like, how did it feel finishing the year? When did you knock until
31st?
Okay, so you started 22 days in, but then you finished all the way till August 31st. Okay, talk to me about your mindset going through August, like realizing that you were like approaching, you know, the 10 spot. What was going through your mind?
Two things. I wasn't planning on staying that long to go back for school in lacrosse. And Ethan hits me up, like, probably first week of August, and he's like, so how are we feeling about making the top 10 push? And I was like, well, my last day's this, so I gotta ball out. And he's like, he asked me some questions, mm-hmm. question-based selling. And he's like, he was just like getting a feel of it. Like, well, if you were to stay, would it be, you know, like, would you miss out on that much, like with school or lacrosse? And I was like, really not that much. So then, like, he basically just like put the two scenarios in front of me. Like, he didn't necessarily like sway me anyway, but he's like, it's, this is what this is, and this is what this is. Choose what, you know, is best for you.
Let you buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, when I thought about it, I was like, you know, you only get one rookie summer, and I just don't think I would have been able to live with the regret of, like, what if I would have stayed longer? You know, would I have been top 10? So then I ended up being like, all right, I'm going to stay. So then in August.
Hey, shout out to Ethan.
Yeah.
For that. Shout out to Ethan.
Yeah. Yeah. And for sure. And then July, like mid-July, it was hit list. So, like, on the leaderboard in the office, I'd go, like, 2-3 spots ahead of me. By next week, I'm passing them. I just did that, like, every week. Didn't always happen. Sometimes it was more than 2 or 3, and sometimes it was 1 or 0 spots, mm-hmm. right? But that was the goal. And then in, like, from that mid-July point to, like, mid-August, that's, like, when I really slid up. So then I just had the hit list, like, this week I'm taking down so-and-so and so-and-so. Mm. And that was, like, my mindset, I guess, for August is just keep climbing.
Where did you start off at the beginning of August? What place were you in?
Overall?
For rookies.
It was definitely close to 20, for sure. If I might not have been in the 20s, but it was definitely down there, like 18 maybe.
So you finished the summer. That's a hell of a finish. Okay, man, so Joe, what was that feeling like when you got – because, I mean, the official numbers come out a little bit later, right?
October 16th or something, yeah.
So everybody's just, like, you know, not exactly sure how it's gonna line up. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of movement between the end of season and when they pull the final numbers. So what was your were there any thoughts that you had before that about, like, hey, what's going to end up happening? And then what did it feel like when you found out you made it?
I was a little surprised, but I was excited. I was like, I can't believe I mean, I can believe it, but, like, it was just surreal, like, to be like, I actually did that. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt cool, you know? I mean, it was something I worked really hard for. You know, I left everything out there. So I would have been at peace from that point of view, but to actually achieve it was really fulfilling also, and get to go to Cabo and, you know, have a really cool trip. That was really fun too.
Yeah, what was that rookie trip like? That top 10 rookie trip?
It was insane. I'd never been to Mexico before. So, like, we flew in, and then the resort's really nice. I know, you know, because you've been on the partner trip there. But the resort's really nice. We went to the beach where there's, like, the really big waves on the one side, and then the other one where it's, like, the little bay. Mm-hmm. So, like, the one day we were just out there in the waves getting slapped by the waves all day. Sand everywhere.
Yep.
And just stuff like that. The restaurants were nice. Really good weather. Couldn't have been any better weather, for sure. Really blessed with that. And wasn't long enough.
Yeah. Yep. I went the previous year, but we had to pick and choose who can go with the Rooks.
They replaced you with
Brent. That's all right. No, Coach Brent should have been there. So, all right. So let's talk about. This is so Joe, as far as team competitions go, in our industry, like, there's one competition that's significantly, you know, more important than anything else, and the Shield.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've talked to a couple, because it's wild. This is a statistic just to help people understand what the environment, you being a driver of that environment. But the environment that you were a part of this past year, the offices in Philadelphia, out of the top 11 rookies in the whole company, right, which we are a little bit over 10% of, we're between 10 and 15% of the company as a whole, 4 out of the top 11 rookies, you being one of them, came from the Philadelphia office. So that is incredibly intense. Now, the size of that team presented some significant challenges when it comes to Shield. There was a lot of doubts as far as when you get that many people, going towards one cause, to get everybody on the same page, which is required for Shield, is something that few teams have ever done successfully. And so, to kind of just create a correct perspective, this was an absolutely just phenomenal past year. I know that we're looking forward to the future, so it's weird because 2024 is where it's at. But just do your best, if you would, to describe what the atmosphere was like, what the going into Shield, what that was like, what that felt like, and then how did Shield go?
So it was super competitive, like within the team. Like Throwdown Thursdays were insane. And even like other days, just call people out for fun other days, over like push-ups or whatever. Mm. But like when we go against other teams, like it was Philly versus everybody,
Yeah.
And just like we knew what we needed to do, and like the expectations were set, by like Steven, Tristan, Brent, Jack, all the other guys. Expectations are set. Here's what we have to do to win it. And like there were days where we weren't on pace, so like they'd be like, hey, here's what we need to do in order to win. So just like being super competitive within, and also against the other teams too, like just not accepting that you're gonna lose.
If I were to be coming to you and saying, hey, we only have 60 seconds for you to verbally give a blueprint that is going to be played over and over to every single person in this organization, in the industry, that wants to go and be part of that, 0.1% of performers, this is going to be their roadmap. All right, what is it that you would say in those 60 seconds to give them as much helpful information as possible?
Work super hard, do all the preparation and the training is there for a reason, and it's all free, so it's up to you to use it and maximize your time out there. But like the most valuable thing for me, like at the end of the day, that drove like all the things that I did for the most part, was like my why and having no regrets. So like everyone else is going to talk about what you need to do, like work and all the other things, but at the end of the day, if you want to be successful, you have to know why you're out there, and what you want to, or I guess why you want to achieve what you want to achieve. And then for me, it was just like, I don't want to have any regrets. I got a long car ride back, 8 months of reflection, and I just didn't want to have any regrets of, I should have done this, or I could have done that, I wish I would have worked harder. So I'd say why and no regrets.
Love that. What are a few pitfalls that you saw take people off course that people should be aware of when they're on the path towards complete focus towards a goal?
Complacency.
What do you mean by that?
Like you think you already made it, but summer's not over yet. And I mean, competition-wise, summer's not over until, like mid-October. But from like a personal goal perspective, just keep the foot on the gas, because you, when you get complacent, that's when you'll really see yourself start to drift from your goals. And like when you're coming from behind, like in my perspective, like I was always climbing, I always had that like competitive edge where it's like I have to work extra hard because otherwise I won't squeak my way, back up in there. Mm-hmm. But when you're at the top, you got to avoid being complacent, because it's gonna hold you back and drag you down.
Love that. What do you think, in your perspective, what are the differences between feeling motivated and being driven? Is there like, how do those words hit you? What do you think the difference is, and what do you think people should work towards being of those two?
I feel like motivated is on a day-to-day basis. Like I wake up, I feel motivated, or I don't feel motivated. Mm-hmm. But if I'm driven, it's more of like a characteristic you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm driven to do this, or I'm driven to do that. So I would say be more driven than motivated, because motivation is going to go away. You know, you're not going to be motivated every single day, you know. So when you're driven, you're willing to do the discipline that, you know, is going to help you get where you want to go. But motivation is more of just like, I feel like going to the gym today, you know, or I'm not that motivated right now. I don't feel like reading this or, you know, doing that, whatever it is.
What is the person that, you know, wakes up, plays video games all day, and, like, you know, doesn't worry about much? What are they missing, do you think?
How do you want your book to read? Like, what do you want your legacy to be? You know, I mean, everybody has things that they're good at and that they can, you know, contribute with. But for me, like, I don't know, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I knew, like, I wasn't at my, you know, potential. And you don't really know, like, what you're capable of without trying things. Mm-hmm. And if you're just sitting back and doing stuff like video games or, you know, whatever it is, then you'll never know, like, what you're capable of and the difference you can make on certain people and what you could do.
Why does it matter to you? Why is it important that you are trying to discover, like, your potential? Why?
Because I think that's, like, that's what we're here for. Like, that's my personal opinion. And, like, I think you're doing not only yourself a disservice, but you're doing a lot of other people a disservice if you're not trying to be the best version of yourself, because there's a lot of people that could benefit from that other than just yourself. And when you always choose comfort, I mean, it's not necessarily bad to choose it, you know, sometimes, right?
Sure.
But when you always choose comfort, then you're never, like, you're never putting yourself in a spot to be vulnerable and learn, which will help you have an impact, but which is different for everybody. It looks, you know, different for everybody. But mm-hmm. when you're always choosing comfort, there's never, like, that opportunity for growth toward that next step.
Being 20 years old in 2024, there are a lot of new, you could call them distractions, just new things that will take your attention. There's so many people trying to get your attention. What are some of the things you do to maintain focus in this world that bombards you? What some things that you do to keep your focus consistent on moving ahead in the direction that you want to go?
I think, like, visualization helps, or, like, vision boards, because, like, it's a constant reminder of, hey, this is what I wanna accomplish. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you that's a little reminder of, like, you know, I got to keep doing, you know, the things, and I'll get there. But for me, like, writing things out and, like, scheduling time, like, my schedule, I always have, like, if something doesn't go to plan, then it is what it is. But, like, I have everything laid out. That way I don't have to spend a bunch of time thinking, like, all right, where does this fit in? You know, how can I do that? So either, you know, write it out and then, like, check it off, or just put it in my calendar and then, you know, I know and follow it like that. So I'd say, like, the biggest way to stay focused is just, like, structure your time, you know, know what you want to do, like, increase vision, but structure your time in a way that you can focus on the things you want to focus on and still have time to, you know, do some other things too. Like, especially when it gets nice out, like, I want to go outside and do things, like, mm-hmm. go for a walk, go fishing, play some cornhole, you know, just whatever.
It's a Michigan thing, man.
Yeah, yep. So you can do both, you know what I mean? So, like, just structuring your time, I would say.
How do you go about not taking things personally?
Something I wasn't very good at when I was younger, but I feel like that's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, at least, like, in the job itself, it's just, like, they didn't ask me to show up, you know, and it's just, like, I'll just go to the next door and I'll, like, it's just, like, a reset, you know, like, all right, yeah, it happened, but I'll just go to the next door.
What framework have you come to understand that has allowed you to be somebody that, from what I know of you, like, I've never seen you take anything personally in it, like, I've never seen it, which I'm sure that you have over the course of your life because you're a human being, you know, but you're, you know, but I've never seen it, man, and that's allowed you and people around you to thrive. Like, when did you come to that realize? Was there something that happened? Like, how did you understand to that this is not serving me to take things personally all the time?
I just think it was gradual, you know. It's like, what am I getting worked up about? Is this going to bother me tomorrow? Is this going to bother me tomorrow? Probably not, you know, depending on what it is. If it's not, then it's like, okay. So I was just listening to a book, and or maybe it was Limitless Minds, but like it's 90 seconds.
Yeah.
90 seconds. Yep. So this is before I even knew about that, but now knowing that, it makes even more sense. 90 seconds, you're going to be a little more, you know, worked up. So, I mean, you could even allow yourself to have those 90 seconds. But then after that, you know, use the techniques like, hey, is this going to bother me tomorrow? No. Then, all right, I have nothing to worry about. But, like, working up to that, I would just say, like, it was gradual. I mean, I'd get upset about things, and it's like, is it really worth getting upset about it? And 9 times out of 10, it wasn't.
Joe, thanks so much for coming in. It's awesome to have you, man. Looking forward to 2024. What are a couple of things that you are looking forward to from your team and just from the season in general?
I want to see the steps that all the reps take from, you know, like when they first sign to the end of the summer, and it's like all the doors that they open for themselves, or, you know, get open for them, whether it be, you know, like them hitting their revenue goals or, you know, take-home pay goals, and just the skills that they're going to learn, the people they'll meet, getting to see new parts of the country. Like, that'll be really cool, and see them, you know, grow. Mm-hmm. And team is going to do $4 million. That's the goal. So that That's ties good. Into that. And then personal goal, 600K, and top 10 overall.
My final question for you, man, to all the experienced reps, to the rookies that are just about to touch their first door, if they haven't already, what's one thing that you would say to them that's been running through your mind as far as like a major focus point for this year that's going to help you achieve your goals?
No regrets and have fun.
Hey, that works, man. I appreciate you coming in, Joe, and look forward to seeing you next year after summer 2024.
Thanks for having me.